And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott.
I'm Jim Burris. For the past few weeks, we've been exploring what the concept of affordable housing looks like in Atlanta. Uniformly, housing costs here are outpacing gains in household income. But nowhere is that divide happening more quickly or more drastically than along Atlanta's Beltline. And that's where our next guest, Laura Wright, comes in. 5 years ago, she moved to an apartment in the Highlands neighborhood in Northeast Atlanta. Laura Wright no longer lives there.
And that's because she couldn't afford to stay in her Beltline adjacent apartment after her landlord doubled the rent overnight. In this next installment of our affordable housing series, our producer, Ebony Lemon, actually caught up with Laura on the Beltline, not far from where she recently lived.
I can't find anything in this neighborhood anymore that's within my price range. One bedrooms are almost impossible to find under $1,200. Trying to look out what would be more affordable, but then you're looking into displacing other people, and it just seems to be a downward spiral in this area. Can't live in a neighborhood that I want to live in, despite the fact that it's in a place that I've lived my whole time in Atlanta.
And now Laura joins us in studio to share more of her story. Laura, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's go back to when you first moved into your apartment. What was about that area that you loved so much?
Well, for me at that time, it was a great location for, I was coming out of being a student at getting my master's degree at Emory University, so it was a neighborhood that I was familiar with. It was already at that time a neighborhood that was easily walkable. I was still right across the street from a grocery store, really close to Trader Joe's. Obviously, we all know the Highlands and all the restaurants and bars that are associated with that neighborhood. Yeah, so I just wanted to stay in the neighborhood that I was familiar with, that was home for me in Atlanta, that I was happy in.
How much was your rent?
$675, which was a steal at that time even, but it wasn't a fancy apartment by any means.
But it was your home.
It was my home.
Fast forward 5 years, how does the neighborhood look differently than it did then?
Well, I was there. I don't remember exactly the day that the Beltline got paved. I still remember it as a paved Beltline. So I came after that wave, at least. But I remember walking down the Beltline, watching the signs of Pont City Market, you know, fall of 2015 opening, like, oh, when will that be? You know, like, what's going to be in there? How's that going to look? And even other things like Tuber and Licks coming up along the side, the different paths that opened up to Old Fourth Ward Park, mm-hmm. that whole transformation of that area, Old Fourth Ward, just watching that whole neighborhood change, and even the amount of people that were going to Piedmont Park changed, a park that's been in Atlanta for, it seems like, a long time. The number of people that were using that area even changed more, too.
So it's safe to say that you were excited about the Beltline and the potential it had.
Absolutely.
And there was a moment where that changed. Tell me about that.
Yeah. I think for me, it was as I started to, you know, I was using the Beltline as a path for walking, biking, getting around, activity, as it should be, as it was designed, I'm sure. But as it started getting more and more full, the attitudes of people changed. That was a major one, where people started getting more possessive of space and angry at other people who were either going too fast, too slow, stopping in the middle, something that I was even guilty of. But then also, as for me, it was especially when Pont City Market opened up and I saw actually what was inside. And it was kind of coming alongside of the same time when Masquerade was being taken down. And there was talks, it was only talks at that time, of Murder Kroger being taken down and the thoughts of the new place that was going to be built in that area. And I was like, what is happening in my neighborhood? Like, I moved here, obviously, for all of this walkability, but I don't feel like they're catering to the people who live here. I feel like they're trying to make this maybe another Buckhead, or they're getting rid of what was the character of the neighborhood. That's what made the Ponce Highlands and the Highlands that neighborhood, but I felt like they were getting rid of the character.
And your rent, you were paying $675, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, what happened?
So it did increase by a lot. There was some interesting finagling that seemed to happen around that time. I was asked by my landlady if they could use my apartment as a showroom for insurance purposes. And they came in and looked around, and I thought it was just, you know, typical. I don't really understand apartment housing sort of thing. They're like, we're just looking around insurance purposes. And next thing you know, the ownership had changed. And so we were bought out by what was, like, I think privately owned, like, it was just a little a 12-unit apartment building was then bought out by a larger corporation that owns a lot of apartments along that area. And within 60 days, they were excited to announce their new ownership and then also some major changes, which included the price change.
What was the price increase?
They increased it to $1,400 for the new people, but as existing tenants, we could stay for $1,225.
Double. What does that do to someone not too far out from college, kind of making their way?
Absolutely everyone in the apartment complex moved out. None of us were able to stay. People's dates seem to be different. Most of us had to be out by October 9th of 2016, but the rest of us moved. For me, it was hard. You know, you look around. I'm not too far out from college. A lot of student loans. People in my demographic, we need to live responsibly. But there's nothing in that neighborhood that you can be responsible living under. So you're forced to move out from those neighborhoods.
Where did you move to?
I was actually fortunate and found a place about 2.5 miles north in North Morningside that I was able to move in with a few other people in a duplex now. And it's a really great house. Something really worked out for me. But my rent has increased even still while moving in with people. And I have lost all of my walkability and bikeability that I used to have from my old place.
You know, when we started this series, we spoke to a woman named Anne who lived in Buckhead, who had been there, renting there for 21 years. But as you saw, and I asked her the same question, as you saw all of this new development, you know, coming aboard, did you think at some point I might have to move? Or was that never a reality for you?
I don't know if I ever thought it would happen to me. Yeah. And I'm sure maybe a lot of people think that, you know, like I'm just a person. You don't really think that, or maybe you do. I don't know. Like with me, I was very happy with my, sorry, excuse me. I wasn't thinking about the ownership of my apartment complex. I'm living my life. So the ownership change and then what that meant, I think, had more repercussions than I realized.
You know, we've been asking Laura, a lot of people, their idea of what affordable housing should look like. And I think often people, the perception is, oh, that has to just be for low income people. But you're in a population, you're part of a demographic that everybody says it's who they're targeting, millennials, correct?
Right.
But that price point doesn't necessarily fit you.
I have wondered so many times, like, who are these people who are moving into these apartments? I would assume I am the target demographic. I am a young millennial, albeit with a lot of student loans, but that's the millennial demographic. But we want to live in these neighborhoods that are active and facilitate these sort of activities that that draw us to those neighborhoods. So in my mind, you would have to be in a relationship. You'd have to have a dual income to live in these sort of one bedroom apartments. And then even double or triple up into two bedrooms, if you can. I really just don't know who the people are that are affording these places.
We heard an excerpt from the conversation you had with our producer, Ebony Lemon, and I was listening to the entire interview, and something that you said really struck me, and that was that the folks who are coming in all look the same. What's at stake here when you think a bigger picture and the identity of a neighborhood or a city when you make a statement like that?
I mean, I think that's what makes Atlanta so amazing is its diversity, its eclecticness. It's, you know, it's not all the same type of person. Mm-hmm. And so when you design an area to be uniform and you get uniform people, then you lose the culture, you lose the excitement, you lose anything that draws somebody to these areas. And I think Atlanta is doing itself a disservice by creating neighborhoods where it loses diversity.
Skeptics would say maybe, you know, this is just capitalism at work. This is a market-driven thing. It's not any one individual's choice to do this. What do you say to that?
You know, that is such a good question. I don't know if I have an answer. This is something that even I have been wondering as not a capitalist and not wanting someone to profit off this. As I can no longer afford to rent, what should I buy? And what what does that mean? Am I perpetuating the problem? So that is another thing, you know, like even for people who don't want to capitalize off of this, there seems to be a downward spiral. But also there's got to be a good way of doing these sort of things. I think going back to Ponce City Market mm-hmm. And all the development around that area, they didn't need to put in Williams-Sonoma and West Elm. They put in Citizen Supply that has local artisans. They put in other places that had restaurants that could be owned by local restaurateurs or incentivize people to buy from local farms, even if they had something like that. I think you can probably do smarter development than what we have been doing.
So what does the future hold for you? You're in a nice place now, though you don't have all the walkability, as you mentioned, that you once had. So do you think you will try to buy to stay in the neighborhood that you want to be in?
Well,
because renting is high, right. Buying is high.
Ironically, my rent is going to go up in April in my new place again. Still to something that I think I can afford, so I'll probably stay there for now. But it's a perpetual problem. Every 6 months to 12 months, as far as I can see, this is going to be a new issue for many people in my life and then other people that I know who rent. So, and then you start looking at places like Adair Park that I obviously could never afford to buy in the Beltline that it is now.
But and that's on the west side of the Beltline.
Where the Beltline people know is going to be going. And we already, I think, have seen a lot of price hikes in these neighborhoods where people are prospecting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't think I personally have the means to buy right now. But it's also something that I've been wrestling with of, if I did, is this the right choice? Or what can I do to help Atlanta and not harm it, but also help myself get ahead in a place where Atlanta is growing and changing. And I would love to like invest in the city that I really love, you know? So I don't know what the answer is there. I would love it if you guys could tell me.
That's why we did the series. We try to find out.
We ask questions. We don't give answers.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, is there a saturation point? Is there a number where you just have to throw in the towel and say, look, I cannot afford to live here anymore?
Well, I have done the numbers for me personally. I, over my holidays, took a budget and hashed out everything I could do. Like, if I removed certain activities here or there, but there were certain things that were just important to me as a person that I didn't want to remove. And then also the fact that a quarter of my income goes to my student loans a month, that's immovable. So for me, the thought of paying $1,000 a month for rent is a lot. I cannot handle that as this person, whether that's living with a roommate or not. And so for me, that saturation point is $1,000. I know people that it's 12, but I don't know many that it's 2,000, and that's what some of them are going for.
Yeah.
So
Atlanta resident Laura Wright sharing her story about renting. This has been another installment of our affordable housing series. Laura, first of all, thank you for writing to us and telling your story, and then thank you for coming in and sharing even more. Yeah. Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
For Rose Scott, I'm Jim Burris. Thanks for listening.